I'm a security officer. I cannot let you go until I have confidence that Carlyle is not going to take any destructive action. Oh? Julia chirruped, peering up again, her dark eyes into Carlyle's blue. You haven't noticed Mycroft's non-uniform shoes? Carlyle bit his lip and thought. No. They're Ahimsa shoes. Brightness flooded Carlyle's face, as when dark shutters open to the cheer of noon. Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, Mycroft's weird brushy-on-the-bottom shoes? Thisbe asked. I thought those were a servicer thing, to scrub when you walk. Julia chuckled. Fun guess. No, it's a philosophical thing. Extreme pacifists wear them. It's named for an old Buddhist practice, but people do it for all reasons. The soles are soft bristles on the bottom, like a toothbrush, so they don't kill insects if you step on them. Preservation of all life. That's the last shadows left Carlyle's face. Mycroft said death was too light a punishment for them, that they have to pay more. Exactly. Julia pushed back a stray chocolate curl. Mycroft Connor is doing a very deep and dedicated social penance, and if the parole officers and I keep an extra strict watch on them, it's mostly because they have a bad habit of skipping meals and overdoing anti-sleeps and working themselves to exhaustion. Ahimsa shoes. Carlyle ran his fingers through his hair, his voice gaining that nervous tenderness that edges upon awe. The earlier arguments had been the wrong ones for him. Bridger's loyalty, Occam's duty, Thisbe's good sense. What Carlyle needed was a sensei. Mycroft Connor has had a very difficult path, Julia continued, and has very difficult things to live with, more difficult than anyone in the world. I've been working with them a long time. I'd love to look over the case together with a Bash loss specialist. Carlyle took a deep breath, smiling at last. I owe you an apology, Thisbe. I reacted very extremely, and it was unfair to you. This was an unfair situation, and it wasn't your fault. Thisbe pursed her lips. Thank you. You don't need to worry about me going public. Again, she pursed her lips. I believe you. Thank you. Julia made a little victory gesture with her small fists, as when one successfully plays matchmaker or scores a goal. And now, since you're satisfied, Thisbe, I prescribe, in the name of sanity, bait. Their eyes met here, Thisbe and Julia. The humanist and European. A long, contemplative gaze exchanged between the pair who had both, until now, thought themselves unrivaled as the most important living woman in Mycroft Canner's life. Each must have known in the abstract that the other existed, but neither had, I think, expected their first encounter to be quite so symmetrical. Agreed, Thisbe concluded. This was very helpful, and I'm glad to see Mycroft and Carlyle both in good hands. She offered a smile. Europeans really are so sensible. The addendum, compared to cousins, passed unsaid. Julia gave a gratified nod. I can put you on the waiting list for an appropriate humanist sensei, if you like. Thank you, but Carlyle's excellent. A perfect choice. Both senseis smiled. Thisbe nodded. Good night, Carlyle. I hope you get a good rest. Thank you. Good night, Thisbe. And I hope you're not on duty too early tomorrow. An unhappy groan confessed she was. The car was ready, and Julia had a thermos of soothing herbal tea. And now, reader, a conversation of a different kind, and a face of things that I myself was unaware of until later days. Julia. How's progress? Carlyle. Slow. Having this investigation on top of us is a big problem. Julia. they're accepting you? Carlyle, yes, though it was scary just now when Thisbe called you on the no humanists available thing. But Thisbe seems happy with me. Julia, any access to Sniper yet? Carlyle, no, nor Occam. I did make inroads with Leslie Sinier. We're starting off well. And I had a tough but productive little talk with one of the Setsets. Julia, have you seen the twins yet? Carlyle, not hide nor hair. I get the feeling they're actually more unstable than Cato Weeksbooth, but nobody wants to talk about it. Julia, they'll be in good hands with you. Carlyle, I hope so. Julia, I'm afraid I have bad news. Carlyle, what? Julia, the CFB. Carlyle, what about the CFB? Julia, what about the CFB? She tapped his forehead. Earth to Carlyle Foster? Hiroaki Mitsubishi's application? Carlyle, that was today? Julia, Carlyle, you've been following nothing else for weeks. Carlyle, sorry, there's been stuff. Julia, stuff? You've never pleaded stuff before. Carlyle, irrelevant stuff, nothing to worry about. What was the outcome? Julia, point for the enemy. Hiroaki Mitsubishi is now training with the CFB assistant section chief. Carlyle, which section? Julia, education. Nothing could stab the cousin deeper. The cousin's feedback bureau. All hives are proud of their unique governments. Europe's nation strat parliament, the Masons' non-hereditary absolute monarchy, the Mitsubishi shareholder democracy, the humanist flexible constitution democracy, the Gordian brain bosh and corporate board appointed by Brill's Institute. And if those hives have an irritant, it is that the cousins can remain the perennially second largest, second strongest hive with a system the others wish they could deride. Suggestion box. The all-embracing cousins never did update their structure. Not since the earliest days of Mukta's children, when they were just a volunteer group for women to help each other while traveling abroad. They had a volunteer committee with a chair, some rules of conduct, a family-friendly atmosphere, and a suggestion box. No more. No one thought they could stick to it, not as their membership expanded. Women, minors, sexual minorities, then kids of members, friends of members, friends of friends of friends, finally anyone willing to act like a distant cousin, and offer smiling airport pickup, and a sofa for the night to a stranger in return for knowing that the stranger would reciprocate. With just shy of 2 billion members, the modern hive has fitted its suggestion box with an analytic feedback bureau streamlined to process 100 million friendly notes a week, group the overlap, and send them on, every one of them, to the right volunteer to consider the suggestion. This town needs a new school. This drug needs a $60 million research grant. This intersection would be a great place for a mural. They get it done, this vast cooperative family. It works. At least if outsiders have not infiltrated and sunk their living fangs into its heart. Carlyle. Hiroaki Mitsubishi, with access to the education processing, Julia, that's not the limit of it. The 710 lists are public now, and CFB Chief Darcy Sock is number 8 on Masami Mitsubishi's list. Every reporter in the world is racing to do a piece on the CFB now, and guess who's now the highest-ranked person in the CFB, who sleeps on Tokyo time and is already up and available for interviews? Carlyle. Hiroaki Mitsubishi? Julia sent the image to Carlyle's lenses, the bureau's friendly, off-pink building studded with balconies, trying its best to hide between its neighbors on one of Casablanca's broad French-style boulevards. But in what should have been the quiet of the night, the reporters and gnat-dense camera robots gave it away. Stories in the cousins' capital always draw more press than a scandal in Togenkyo or Alexandria. Perhaps because we worry more when mom is threatened than father or uncle, or because the austerity of Cousin's Law, which won't permit even a red light district, has doomed the capital to a permanent slow news day. The press had cornered Hiroaki Mitsubishi outside the entrance, evidently returning from a coffee run with a tray of cups in hand. Hiroaki is the only one of Ando's adopted bar kids who looks Japanese by birth, and, this night at least, she had paired Danae's sleeveless, hand-knit sweater with a pair of flowy, silky pants, which invoked a cousin's wrap, despite the miner's sash still about her hips. I'm sure Carlyle's stomach turned. Masami and Hiroaki Mitsubishi, voice and face of the CFB. I haven't read Masami's editorial. What does it say? Julia sighed into her tea. In short, that the only real power in the cousins is the software in the CFB that processes the suggestions, and that all the rest, the board, Kosala, are basically carrying out robot orders. That there's no heart to the hive that's supposed to be all heart. Carlyle pressed his head against the car's side wall. I don't know how we're going to stop this, Julia. The Mitsubishi brood are in the censor's office, the European Parliament, the Humanist Praetor's office. Now the CFB. And Black Sakura isn't the Romanov, but it's still one of the most influential papers in the world. Are you sure it's the Sanir Weeksbooth Bash I should be concentrating on? I should be helping more directly. Give me someone inside the CFB. Julia, no. You're the right kind of specialist for the Sanir Weeksbooth Bash. You can do a better job with them than anyone in the world. That's what I need you now. And better safe than sorry. A compromised CFB would cripple the cousins, but a compromised Sanir Weeksbooth Bash could touch anywhere, anyone. They haven't been a Mitsubishi target yet, but we don't know that won't change. I want you in there keeping them safe. Carlyle. It is a great case. Yes, an important case. I definitely want to keep working with them. But I want to do more, Julia. The enemy actually have someone inside the CFB. If we just knew what their goal was... She stroked his hair. Let me worry about that. If only we could prove this theft was them. She shook her head. I'm sure it wasn't. I think, if anything, it interfered with what they were planning, disrupting what Masami Mitsubishi would have done inside Black Sakura. But things aren't all bad. I finally got Darcy Sock to request a session with me. Brightness at once. You have? We'll guard the CFB yet. Julia brandished a delicate, enthusiastic fist. And another piece of good news. Headmaster Faust sent June Mitsubishi packing with a flea in her ear. No toehold for the Mitsubishi brood inside Brill's Institute. But June has applied for a secretary's post with the Gordian Brain Bash, so they're still trying to worm in. Can this fuss with Masami Mitsubishi help us? If they're fired from Black Sakura, that would be a good setback. Julia gazed at him a moment, slim lips pursed tight. Perhaps. Carlyle, I could... Julia, no. I want you where your strengths are. And I don't want to ask anything that will be a strain on your conscience. Do what you're best at. We have others who can help protect the CFB. Carlyle, but... Julia, when the Sanir Weeksbooth members know you well enough to trust you, when you can suggest they start coming to me, then I can take on some of the burden... And you can take on something new, but not before. We need them close, and we need them safe. Carlyle. It shouldn't be long with Thisbe. Julia. Yes, that seemed promising. But don't push too fast. What have you been doing going there over and over? Carlyle didn't reply. Julia. Stuff? He gave a guilty smile. Do you want a consult? No, it's fine. The whole bash is very guarded from the files. If you push, you'll spook them. Relax and take things naturally. You're a brilliant senseir, Carlyle. I have you where you can do the most good. You'll know if anyone tries to get at them, and you'll stop it. Yes, I'm so glad to have you to depend on at times like this. Despite his gloom, he couldn't fight a smile. Thanks. Oh, Julia? Hmm? What do you know about Tribune J.E.D.D. Mason? The Celebrity Youth Act has never had a tougher case. You met? They're doing the investigation. They came to the Bash House. J.E.D.D. Mason is not a problem. Believe me, there's nowhere I'm more vigilant than Hive leadership. Yes, they have ties to Ando, but it's the Mitsubishi brood we have to watch out for. J.E.D.D. Mason has nothing whatever to do with them. It isn't the ties to Ando, it's... You know about Dominic and Martin? Is it a cult? No, nothing like that. There's nothing dangerous at all with J.E.D.D. Mason. I check up with their senseir all the time. Their senseir? Is that Dominic Seneschal? Yes. Dominic has an odd comportment, I know, but they're immensely skilled. Just right for J.E.D.D. Mason's case. A specialist like you, but different. J.E.D.D. Mason is a very strange young person. It was inevitable for someone growing up around so much power, but I watch, and I'm careful. And there's no cult. No danger. Relief let Carlyle slump. But not complete relief. And what is J.E.D.D. Mason's relationship with Mycroft Canner? Confidential. The conclave head gave her prize student another shoulder squeeze. Don't worry about J.E.D.D. Mason. No one is less a threat to the world order. If anything, they're a pillar of stability that keeps the rest from teetering. Now, would you like a session? Her perfect nails played through the frayed crochet of the old scarf she had given him. Anything new with you on the theological front? New questions? Discoveries? Carlyle summoned his best smile. No, nothing new with me. Could we talk through the post-Barsh loss psych reports on Mycroft Canner? I'd love to hear your readings in light of 13 years of further development. That's an amazing resource. Yes. Yes, Mycroft is quite the resource. Here, at long last, in the tired dark of morning, ends the third day of this history. Chapter the 24th. Sometimes even I am very lonely. I slept that night in Alexandria and breakfasted with Caesar's staff, though Caesar himself would not break bread with Mycroft Canner. I had no time to return to Cielo de Pájaros before reporting to J.E.D.D. Mason's Utopians, but gave myself a half hour to stop at the nearest servicer's dorm, where our tainted and all-forgiving brotherhood was still willing to call me friend. I have been adopted many times since the explosion killed my birth Bash. I was adopted by the cousin Bash next door. I was adopted by the Mardi Bash next to them, and our four other neighbor Bashes, which all let me grow up half-wild like a cat with several homes, whom no one thinks to check on so long as it visits once a week. I was adopted by Thisbe, Bridger, and the Major. But only with the servicers has my adoption been completely without lies. I was at first just one more Mycroft who slept and shoveled beside them. They soon noticed that I made good conversation, and valuable in a society which has no other entertainment, and by the time the wiser of them added Canner to Mycroft, they already felt too much affection to know fear. Apollo Mojave used to frequent a pub in Liverpool, mad as that seems. He was a utopian, a vocateur, a familiaris, as in demand with the powers as I am, with his own Bash, his lover, and her Bash, his constellation, his work, his writing, me, all vying for scarce hours. but he still made time for a pub. It was filthy. One of those dives where locals come for talk and dominoes. At first, no one spoke to this alien utopian, planted at the counter with his visor and his coat, but beer erases barriers. And he was soon listening to tall tales and filling in at games as dear as any puppy. Apollo needed that, he told me. Even if he only saw them once a month, it kept him from forgetting what it meant to be a human being. Without that, how could he claim to be acting for all humanity? Perhaps the servicers give me the same. At a crossroads, 3 blocks from my destination, hands seized me by the throat and dragged me backwards into the alley with a killer's violence. I do not know, reader, if you are so blessed that you have tasted an embrace like this, a universe in itself, so all the outside world could cease and you would smile uncaring. If you have not tasted something like that, it cannot be described. Fierce, dear arms dragged me to the bedding of the alley's trash, pinning my hands more out of habit than need, as his lips tasted my ear. Saladin, I whispered. It is a name I chant sometimes to myself, over and over, as if language had been invented only to form those syllables. Mycroft, he answered in kind. His breath tasted of meat and wild places, the grit of urban underbellies and the clean of mountain stone. My Saladin. No threat, no order, no torture could have made me speak of him to any living soul, but for you, only for you, reader. Never again accuse me of keeping secrets. His voice is a savage, hungry whisper hiss. I found Tully. Sobs without tears seized me, as when one who can no longer pretend he is not sick gives way to coughing. But my Saladin absorbed my sobs, his body like warm hands around a shivering chick. Where? I asked. Luna City. 13 years up there. I can't imagine what it cost. I had guessed Luna City. There are places within the human sphere beyond my reach. The nearest is the moon. They're coming back tomorrow. I saw them on the passenger list. Port Gentile elevator. We spoke Greek together, our birth bash tongue, the language of our intimacy since forever and ever. Could be a trap. Tully Mardy wouldn't use their real name on a passenger list. No utopian would raise a child that stupid. I can feel when Saladin smiles, the way his collarbones flex when he bares those human fangs more dangerous than an animal's since they both bite and speak. True, Tully Mardy on the list would have been stupid. Tully Mojave transcends stupidity and qualifies as painting a bullseye on your face. Tully Mojave, I repeated. How's that for throwing down the gauntlet? He laughed, and I laughed with him, our bodies as aligned as clapping hands. I could feel him getting hard beneath me, and heat stirred in my member too, eager to awaken after so long a sleep. Pup must fancy themselves the successor. His hand reached up under my shirt, his nails tracing paths of fire across my chest. Let's finish it, he invited. 17 was never a good number. It would have been easier to drive a dagger through my heart than answer. I can't. You finish, please. Finish alone. He seized my throat. His calluses had changed again, some new labor or game making them thicker on the edges. Who did this to you? No, tell me. As too tender Carlyle expresses anger sideways by weeping, so Saladin's sadness manifests in snarls and lust for blood. Someone did this to you. No, tell me. He was all around me. Can you imagine? His lips hot at my ear, his left hand scraping my chest while his right stroked my inner thigh, maddening and gentle as a cat's rough tongue. I wanted him. I wanted nothing but him and me to have existed for the whole of time. "I can't," I sobbed. "I can't. They'll do it to you, too." His hands tried to withdraw, but I grabbed them, held them to me, tighter. "I can't take revenge if you won't tell me," he snarled. "Then don't." We had everything we wanted. They were going to execute you. Even the cousins were screaming for your blood. The whole world was going to dirty its hands, and you signed yourself away to Mason. Someone made you do it, and left this shell of you behind. I pressed my lips against his throat so I could taste his last day's marauding, street dust, laurel branches, sweat, goats, gunpowder, sunburn, and underneath, that skin which is almost my own. "Finish it," I begged. "Kill Tully Mardy. Finish for the old Mycroft who was yours, heart and soul. That's the only revenge I need." He snarled, the lightning beauty of that snarl, and let me nip back at his bare ear where no tracker ever rests, my perfect secret Saladin. "Don't let them catch you," I cautioned. "Tully will be expecting me. They won't be ready for you. I know you can do it." I turned fully to let myself see Saladin now, the most beautiful face in the world, fierce teeth, eyes narrowed so they seemed all black like a lizard's, with no lashes, no eyebrows to interrupt the smooth contrast of eye and skin. His blonde wig had slipped back, bearing a scalp with no hair to keep my fingers from enjoying the warmth of blood within. His cheeks had once been as impossibly smooth as rose petals, or as new skin when a callus has just fallen away. But they had weathered fast these last years, and there was wrinkling around his eyes. Time. Like me, he had just passed 30, but he looked like an adult. "You've been forgetting your anti-aging meds," I chided, cupping his dry cheek in my hand. He'd had his gene splices as an embryo, as we all do, but every long year of his self-neglect made clearer that they only do so much. "Meds are such a pain to steal. Don't you dare shorten your days, Saladin. Not by 1 hour, not while I'm still stuck here." He stared at me, those wild, black eyes. "I need a favor," I said.
"Oh?"
His teeth traced the edges of the chunk that he had bitten from my right ear in our youth, and I, in return, felt through his threadbare shirt for the old scar above his heart, where I had cut from him my first taste of human flesh. "You know the child I often visit in the trench at Cielo de Pájaros?"
"I've seen him. I've seen nasty business circling there, too. Even the mob is scared."
"About what?"
"The black Sakura theft. And you poking around about who had the old canner device. No one I've talked to has a clue what's going on. They just don't want trouble from someone else's crime."
That aligned with what I'd guessed. "The child's name is Bridger." Suspicion turned his narrow eyes to slits.
"So?"
"I want you to watch Bridger for me. I want you to..." The words refused to come. "You're right, there are dark things circling. Another predator. I've seen them. Just a glimpse, dark, European-looking black law, keeping out of the sunlight, careful as a lynx. If it comes to it, if I can't keep Bridger out of their hands, if Dominic is about to..." I had to clutch his arms tighter to steel myself. "I need you to be ready to kill Bridger for me. Please? Not now. Just if there's no other way. You can do it gently."
"Do it yourself."
"I can't. You'll grip the skull with both hands and twist."
"I can't. I love Bridger like family. We're almost out of time, Saladin. Please."
Saladin could not any more ignore the frantic beeping of my tracker as it felt my pulse race. He turned over so I could lie upon him, chest to chest,
and we ravished each other as best we could in those precious seconds, lips tasting lips, hands spreading ecstasy through backs and buttocks, our rising sexes all but touching through the clothes we did not have time to open. He was the first to find the strength to break away.
"I'll think about it."
With that, he turned his back, lifted the hood of his utopian coat, and between the griffin cloth and shadows, my Saladin was gone.
"Thou traitor, Mycroft! All these years thou hast let me think that there was justice in the world, that thine evil had been caught and punished, yet here I find thy fiercer half still free. I would have locked my doors and bade my children hurry home at night if I had known.
Or perhaps, reader, you take the other side. Thou traitor, Mycroft! Thou hast left me in despair this decade, thinking that we had lost our noble savage, that the last human beast, still free of the chains of conscience and society, had been captured and tamed, while all these years there were two of you, and the nobler, and hope with him, still roamed free.
Reader, the slave I am now lays open his heart at your command, but the free creature I was back when I roamed with Saladin owes you nothing. I had no right to expose his secret until this history required.
"Be careful," I called to the air where he had been and might still be. "Don't let the child touch you." A subtle swish of something told me he had heard. I rose as soon as I was strong enough, and barely had time to smooth my uniform and hide the traces of Saladin's nails with a smear of dirt before the police cars descended to block the alley before and behind me, like barricades. 5 armed police came with their commander, all uniformed in Romanova's blue, but with different cuts of jacket. A mason here, a Brillist there, an Indian or Chinese Mitsubishi. Like the many exercises of a tailor trying to pick a final form. Why 5? Not because they thought that number could take me if I resisted, but because any fewer would be too scared to approach. Even with so many, they seemed unhappy with the task. Not nervous faces, but those 2 grim expressions the police adopt to keep you from sensing anything beneath. Only their chief at the center was relaxed, slouching as he drew from his satchel the special manacles the Utopians designed for me. He tossed them to his men, as if pitching a baseball. "Morning, Papa," I greeted in common English. Do not read too much into the nickname. Everyone who knows him, from a Romanovan praetor to the lowest clerk, uses that name for Universal Free Alliance Police Commissioner General Hector Carlisle Papadelius. "Morning, Mycroft," he answered. "What was it this time?" "Some kids ran by blasting Cannerbeat." It was an old excuse, and often true. "Will this do, Papa?" one of his backup called, tapping a steel beam which braced one of the buildings. Papa shook his head. "Car's more reliable." I kept my arms as limp as possible as they shackled my wrists to the squad car's bumper beam behind me. "I know the cops feel better if I make no contact." But I could not keep my fingers from brushing one's wrist, and she recoiled as at the touch of burning coal. Sometimes I think Papa brings novices on purpose at these visits, as if facing my evil were their baptism as true servants of the law.
"All secure, Papa," they reported.
"Good."
The Commissioner General's nod let the rest fall back to the periphery, while he settled in, leaning against the curved nose of a second car opposite me. Age seems to have given Papadelius more energy, not less, as fat and muscle waste away, leaving nothing to weigh down his skeleton but his ever-burning brain. He marked his 100th birthday 2 years ago, but thanks to modern science he still has hair on his scalp and pink in his skin, and still sprints like a jackrabbit. In my mind, his true title will always be Detective Inspector,
for it was the rank he truly wanted, fleeing promotion like the plague for almost 70 years. But no pleading could keep Romanova from promoting the man who captured Mycroft Canner. "You've been a busy bee this week, Mycroft." He used Greek now, childhood's tongue for both of us, tender to my ear, though I don't know how it sounds to those who don't associate these tones with home and storybooks, and a mother so faded in my memory now that she is little more than a warm darkness muddled with images of Mama Doll. "It's been a busy week," I answered. "And before I forget, happy Independence Day, one day late." Would you correct me, reader? It had been 2 days since Renunciation Day, but to us the true holiday was the Greek Independence Day, March 25th, when the four-century oppression of the Turks was finally thrown off, just in time for Greece to enjoy brief nationhood before nations became passé. A servicer may not, but Papadelius wore his strat insignia, the Greek flag armband in vivid blue and white. Nation strats like Greece or France or Mexico always offer less conspicuous alternatives, a bracelet or narrow ribbon, but it rankles when I see a Greek declare their pride with anything less than the full armband. Do you laugh, reader, thinking that every nation strat considers itself the most important in the world? Well, we are right. Rome was built from Greece, Europe from Rome, our modern world from Europe's Union, and however many worlds Utopia may colonize, they will all come from this one. So the triremes, which defended Greece at Salamis, defended Mars too, reader, and every hive, and you. "They're trying to keep me off this Black Sakura case," Papa began. "I know. Are they succeeding?" "I'm Commissioner General. You know what that means?" "You get an office in the Forum?" "Cute." His eyes glittered, the brightness of the passenger within his age-thin frame. "It means I trump the law enforcement of all 7 hives. If one, just one, says they want me on the case, no power on this earth can keep me off." I'd learned over our many interviews just how to lean against the car to keep my hands from falling asleep. "You sent Martin in the first place, didn't you?" "Yes, but I didn't expect it to be an either-or, especially not now that it's getting juicier. I've called all 7. Not just the 7, I've called senators, strat leaders, secretaries, tribunes, you-know-who." He picked at his sleeves, always rolled up as if the rank stripes around the cuffs offended him. "The whole reason they forced me into the Commissioner General's chair was to get someone they could trust there. But no matter what I try, no change." His eyes narrowed. "I called Martin Gilbreaker to help me help them, not to banish myself to Paperwork Mountain. The only reason to keep the police off a case is if you don't want it solved." "They don't want it solved," I confirmed. "They want it fixed." "Are they stupid? There wouldn't be this many tremors without something dangerous underneath. Do they even have a plan for if they find something they can't just sweep under the carpet?" "I don't know, Papa." "See, even you don't know. But that isn't really what gets me. What really gets me is knowing the decision to block me was made in about 5 minutes in Ganymede's parlor. Somewhere I could have come if they'd called me, but they didn't." He unleashed his frustration in a kick at an unoffending trash bot. "I thought for sure the Utopians would at least have the good sense to worry when all the others agreed on something, but I got word back from them this morning. It's been handled." "You can't tell me they settled on that answer by themselves. It's not even you speak. If I had a euro for every time I've heard that sentence in the past 2 days, I could retire on it." 20 minutes, I corrected. "What? It took them 20 minutes in Duke Ganymede's parlor to decide to keep you off the case, and there were reasons for it. You've heard who is handling it." "J.E.D.D. Mason. I nodded. You know J.E.D.D. Mason's a good person. And you know Martin Gildbreaker's a good person. If they find something that needs you on it, they'll come to you. A slow breath. Hopefully. But then why block me from the case? I don't know. I really don't. Papa shook his tired head. Since when have they let politics be this openly incestuous, Mycroft? Sunio Sugiyama put Sniper instead of Ganymede on a 7-10 list, and everyone's acting like it's the end of the world. Even 30 years ago, you couldn't find two 7-10 lists with the same top seven. But when's the last time you saw one of the Gordian brainbosh members on there instead of the headmaster, huh? Or a European other than the Prime Minister? The guards around us were growing nervous, hearing the Commissioner's Greek so heated. What worries me is that they aren't even being subtle anymore. The Mitsubishi Hive leader is the humanist president's brother-in-law, and no one's crying conflict of interest. Do people really not care? A deep breath. It shouldn't be this easy for them, Mycroft. The death of majority doesn't help if the minorities come together and act like they're majority again. Do you still believe in the death of majority, reader? The first Anonymous's first essay, lauding what they saw as the promise of eternal peace. After the church war, there was no majority race, no majority religion, no majority language, no majority nationality. Mukta birthed a world so intermixed that no one anymore grew up among people mostly like themselves. The majority of Japanese people did not live in Japan. The majority of Greeks did not live in Greece. So, too, for every country in the world. Majority died with church and nation, the Anonymous proclaimed. And with it, war and genocide died, too, for they require majority united. Patriots, an us and them, in which us is normal, larger, more powerful, capable of overwhelming and defeating them. I could ask any contemporary here, are you a majority? And I know what he or she would answer. Of course not, Mycroft. I have a hive, a race, a second language, a vocation, and an avocation, hobbies of my own. Add up my many strats, and you will soon reduce me to a minority of one, and hence my happiness. I am unique, and proud of my uniqueness, and prouder still, by being no majority, I ensure eternal peace. You lie, reader. There is one majority still entrenched in our commingled world, a great us against a smaller them. You will see it in time. I shall give only one hint. The deadliest majority is not something most of my contemporaries are, reader. It is something they are not. Couldn't you ask to investigate on behalf of the hiveless? I asked. Papa shook his head. Not if no hiveless have been affected by the crime. So far none are. If the Senior Weeksbooth Bash had kids who were minors, I could use them as an excuse, but as it is, Dominic Seneschal is missing. Dominic Seneschal isn't a missing person yet. They turned their tracker off themselves and didn't specify a duration after which they should be sought if they don't check in. Thanks to a certain Mycroft Canner, Papa nodded his mock gratitude, we're allowed to start search and rescue after 5 days without contact. No matter what the person said, but that's still a ways off. Besides, I don't want to go in without at least one of the big seven giving their stamp of approval, or I'll bring them all down on my head. I need a way to make it look like I didn't push for this, like one of them requested it. I see. I glanced down at my utopian manacles, their taut, gelatinous surfaces almost comforting after so many meetings. You could try King Isabel Carlos. These days the others don't have the heart to say no to their majesty's requests. If you get the king to support you, it'll be hard for the others to object, especially because Ando and Ganymede can never pass up a chance to piss on Casimir Perry. Spain? Papadelius took a heavy breath. Yes, Spain would do, though when the Bourbon dynasty is the least incestuous element of your politics, you worry. We laughed together, and I feared the sight of Mycroft Canner laughing would drive the ghost-faced policewoman on my left to an early grave. But Papadelius calmed her with an authoritative nod. And with that out of the way, shall we look at March 19th? He did not have to specify the year. There's a discrepancy in your timeline here. I don't have time today, Papa. I have jobs waiting. Just one question. His lenses were already glittering with reports, though I cannot believe there were any details of my case left which Papa had not memorized. That was a busy day for you. You grabbed Kohaku, Chiesa, Mercer, and Luther in one day. I shrugged. I had to move fast. The third body was about to be discovered, and two more Bosch members were missing. It wouldn't take you long to put the rest in protective custody. If I grabbed them then, I could finish them any time. I wondered what topic the others thought we had moved to, these guards who stood deaf to our Greek, but could see our body language grow more comfortable, more like family than enemies. No, I am dearer to this vocateur than family. Modern police work was invented by yet another Frenchman, Eugène François Vidocq, a son not of the 18th century, but the 19th. Vidocq's exploits, with their disguises, great escapes, false identities, and lifelong rivals, are so spectacular one can hardly believe in them. Indeed, he seems more like one of Bridger's miracles than real when one reads of the life which provided meat enough for Vidocq's good friend Victor Hugo to base not just Valjean, but Javert too, on this one man. Between his exploits, Vidocq invented police networks, salaried informants, plainclothes detectives, all the vital tools of Papa's trade, and Papadelius so idolizes this role model that he even forgives him for not being Greek. Deep down, I know Papa longs for the Chinese curse of interesting times. To Vidocq, fate granted prison breaks, fierce nemesis, an escape from galley slavery, and he made the most of tumults, creating false identities, infiltrating the very criminal world he worked to cage, and, after one great prison break, toiling for years disguised as his own successor in order to win a royal pardon for his former self, and then unmasked dramatically before the throne. But our present is too orderly to offer such adventures to poor Papadelius. By rights, at some point in his 8 decades' toil, Providence owed Papa a multi-decade sparring match like Javert and Valjean. Or at least the few precious years Holmes had with his Moriarty. But alas, when Papa's longed-for master criminal finally came, our battle only lasted 2 short weeks. You will indulge us if we won't let those 2 weeks end. Here's today's question. Papa's eyes sparkled like a poor poker player's unable to disguise a good hand. If you'd spent the whole previous day doing jug and funnel water torture on McKenna Mardy in Bunker 2 and feeding Lee Mardy to lions in the African reservation, when did you have time to go back to the Alps and refill the tank for Gia Mardy's Chinese water torture? It only held 200 gallons. That wouldn't have lasted 3 whole days. I didn't have to refill the tank, I answered instantly. It had already been 2 days. Gia had gotten used to measuring time by how far the water level rose. If the water supply ran out, they would pass out as soon as the dripping stopped. And then, when I refilled it and the drip started again, they'd wake up and not think any time had passed, since the water hadn't risen. If no time has passed psychologically, it doesn't break the spell. But the body recovers during sleep, the mind, too. Not enough to matter. I see. He didn't like that answer. He had that itchy look, like he would go back to his notes and brood, then call at 4 a.m. with some loophole. In fact, He had one now.
How'd you feed your dog, then?
What?
Your dog?
You can't have taken it with you where the lions were.
You left it in the Alps?
I smiled. I left it gnawing on Laurel's left arm. Plenty of meat for 2 days.
But that was already 2 questions.
Are we done?
Papa gave me a wary, probing squint.
For now. Sometimes I almost wished Papa would find it, the one elusive question I would have no answer for. He smelled something unfinished in my tale, my seamless web of answers. How did I do it? How did I strike so many so far apart, such complex tasks so fast? If nothing else, then 20, 30 years hence, on his deathbed, Papa deserved to hear me whisper, Saladin.
Chapter the 25th. Madames. The 6 Hive transit system welcomes you to Paris. Visitors are required to adhere to a minimum of grey hiveless law and to Parisian city regulations. For a list of local regulations not included in your customary law code, select Law. Where else could the heart of all have been, reader? In the Enlightenment, Paris was the crown and capital of all things, as if Romanova, Alexandria, and La Trimouille were rolled in one. To live there was to live where all that mattered in the universe could be strolled to in a day, and to be banished thence was to be banished to mud and haystacks. Such a power does not lose its grip upon the world in a mere 600 years.
Over here!
Thisbe waved Carlyle over to her table at a corner cafe, where she had drawn him with the simple lure.
Occam only said we couldn't continue at the Bosch.
Despite his late night, Carlyle had risen full of strength that day, for March the 26th was the birthday of the great sage Zoroaster and the Synaxis of Archangel Gabriel, a day on which men honor the Creator in ages past, today, and honor also those who gave us access to him. I couldn't find out any more about this black hole than its location. Eureka was right about it being very secret. She beamed pride. I found a service entrance. Shall we? They were already at the steps when I realized I hadn't checked on Carlyle in a while and found his tracker signal in the worst place in the world. With a hybrid of Papadelius's clearance codes and J.E.D.D. Mason's, I hacked into Carlyle's camera feed at once and saw the stairs before him, period laundry flapping on the lines above. Blame came first. I blamed Occam for consenting to let Martin's team investigate the Sanir Weeksbooth Bosch. I blamed Papadelius for sending them. I blamed the thief behind the Black Sakura affair. I even blamed Giulia Doria Pamphili, as if Carlyle, stumbling in on Bridger 4 days earlier, had somehow been her fault for sending him. I blamed myself above all. I did not, oddly enough, blame Carlyle or Thisbe. Carlyle, in my mind, was like a child's ball tossed toward a pit, helpless unless another player intervenes. And Thisbe was... Thisbe, by nature, could not resist the scent of secrets. How could I stop them? That was my only question. There had to be a way to stop them. It was an old town chateau, vast in its way, but cramped between its neighbors, as if the wings of a sprawling palace had been picked up and stacked within one crowded lot, like building blocks carefully packed to fit back into the box. Rows of arched or pedimented windows had not been altered since the days when architects worked with sketches of ancient temples on one side of the desk and tracings of flowers on the other. The columns, moldings, and tracery were fluted stone, the doors and windows ornamented with ivy fine iron. Double and triple staircases waltzed one around another up the facade, like the petaled fabric of a wedding dress.
Humans have decorated things ever since cave dwellers first learned to weave or to fire clay to hardness, gracing a pitcher with figures, a shawl with stripes. I think an ancient craftsman considered each creation a capsule of his immortality. So long as future ages see this work and speak its maker's name, I am eternal. Only in the ages when we slogged through labor eager for our play did we degenerate to mass production and boring houses. The men who crafted Madame's facade made for themselves a respectable immortality. Remember, Thisbe coached, if anyone asks, we got the address from Occam for my security check, and we don't know where Occam got it from. She led the way, the sensei's hand in hers, like the leash of a reluctant pup. She chose well. A servant's stairway, half hidden in a minor street behind the house, one of six, for the mansion was fed by many back ways, like an old rose bush, with far more roots than blossoms. If we just tell them we're looking for J.E.D.D. Mason to ask about the investigation, they'll think we have every right to be here. My mind raced. Threats? Would threats stop them? Would lies? I could tell them something happened, that we had to get back to Bridger. I could tell them Thisbe's bash house was on fire. No, distraction wouldn't work. They had the address. Even if there really was a fire, they'd just come back once the flames were quenched. Cats stay curious, no matter how many die. You want to ask for them directly? What if they're actually here? They're in Alexandria. Eureka checked. If we ask for them, we'll be offered close associates, or at least vague answers. At a place this big, we can't count on the first person who opens the door being useful, like that Blacklaw housekeeper. I wonder what they call them here, Carlyle mused. Call who? J.E.D.D. Mason? This is a private address. Eureka said Dominic and Martin also come here a lot. It might be a Bosch house, or at least the Bosch seems to frequent it. And I'm sure they don't call J.E.D.D. Mason by clumsy initials or titles if this is something like a home. What do you think they call them here? Maybe by their real first name? I could have Occam stop Thisbe, I speculated, by calling and telling him she was about to put the Bosch at risk. She would obey his order. But that would bring her black wrath down upon me, and danger with it, to myself, and, more importantly, to Bridger. Was there another way? Thisbe chuckled. Now there's a mystery to rival what's in Cardi's pants. We know the name starts with the letter J. After Martin and Dominic, I bet it's a scandalous old name, like James or John. Or Joseph, Carlyle contributed. Joshua. Jean-Baptiste. No, then it would be J.B.E.D.D. Mason. I suppose. That rules out Jean-Jacques, too. The instant Carlyle's foot touched the first landing, his tracker let out a siren squeal, while a cheerful voice rang out loud enough for even Thisbe to hear. This is a friendly warning from the Cousins legal team. Our member is reminded that red-zoned properties and businesses are off-limits. To file for a special exemption for a legal or social service visit, select File. Red-zoned? Thisbe repeated. This... Carlyle gaped up at the building's wall, a side wall, rows of windows, closed with drapes of damask and heavy velvet. This is a brothel. Huh. Her eyes grew wide. I guess it is. Does this mean you can't go in? The Emperor's child frequents a brothel? Should I go on without you? The Emperor's child, who is still a minor, frequents a brothel? Carlyle, Thisbe had to snap. It's no problem for a humanist to go into a red zone. Shall I go on without you? No, I'll just turn my tracker off. She stared, as at an idiot. Won't your police ask questions if you turn your tracker off on the threshold of a red zone? If you need to, we can check into a hotel and you can tell your tracker you're taking it off for a shower. Carlyle shook his head. It's all right. I can get an exemption if I explain that you were going in and wanted your sensei with you. Thisbe frowned. It's that easy?